Hi, everybody. My name is Russell. I'm an alcoholic, a member of the Carl Gables Group. And I just want to tell you how grateful I am to be here and to be asked to share with you a little bit for the next 12 or 13 weeks, because this is going to be more like an introduction. It's going to be sort of truncated. Instead of speaking for the hour, I'm going to sort of cut it off at I'm going to go against my nature and cut it off at around 15 after, so we can celebrate birthday night. And I want to sort of give you a little introduction as to where I'm coming back from, so you know a little bit about me and get an idea of what's going on here, so you could make plans for going to somebody else's meeting if I'm not your deal. You know, A is like a giant toolbox. There's a wrench to fit every nut that walks through the door, and I may not be your wrench, so I'm just going to try to be as authentic as I possibly can. And, you know, when I try to do these things, I try to talk from my personal experience. I've been around for 25 years sober, and I got to be honest with you. I'm somewhat opinionated. I'll try to mellow that down, but I'm never quite successful at restraining myself. So no sense getting too pissed off at anything I say. I'll probably change my mind on the way home. It's sort of good. This is like a road trip for me. I'm sort of off-Broadway. I was doing the step series about a half an hour from my house. I'm about 40 miles, 50 miles south of here, but I seem to do a bunch in Broward County. I always like coming to Broward County for a lot of reasons, in North Miami, because I have a lot of people I know up here over the years and people I sponsor up here that don't quite make it down to South Dade. And when I come up here, I see a whole different group of people that I've known for many, many years. And I just love these people, and I love seeing them, and I get to connect with them. And that's a good thing, too. And I've spoken here before, and this was the group that my second sponsor. I've had three sponsors. Bob Sullivan, Joe Snyder, who belong to this group, and John Glenn, who's here tonight with me, and John's got 52 years, and so it's just a good, nice group to come to, and of course it's always a privilege whenever anybody asks you to share in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I just want to give you a little bit of idea of where I'm coming from and where I'm at, and you know, you never can fit the whole deal. It's hard to fit 25 years in like 20 minutes. As much as I would like to. So I want to talk a little bit. I'm going to read a little. I always read a little bit from the big book, because no matter how screwed up I am, at least you get a little pure AA. Tell a little bit about my story and tell you where I'm coming from. I had a guy come up to me once, coming out of the car room, and he said, you know how people talk to you. And we have, you know, listen, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what my sponsor said to me once? I was complaining about somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was complaining about him because he was a little wacko. Can you imagine that, running into a wacko in Alcoholics Anonymous? And how unbelievable. How could that happen? And he said, well, Russell, you must have thought you joined Well People's Anonymous. And I don't know whether he thought he was sort of ingratiating himself with me or just saying, you know, it's very hard for alcoholics. We have a hard time having relationships with each other, with other people, with anything human, any mammals. We have a hard time talking. We feel uncomfortable. That's why we drank. You know, men and women drink because, you know, they're restless, irritable, and they like the effect. You know, we have a tough time. We're liking, you know, talking to people. You know, we have conversations with people. We walk away and say, why did I say that? What did I do? In 15 minutes, we're saying, I sound so stupid. And, you know, so we're just sort of strange that way. We're always on guard, and that has a lot to do with fear, and that has to do with personal relationships and people pleasing, and we're going to get into that later on in the steps as far as that deal is concerned, because I think what sobriety is all about is it's all about freedom, not only from booze, but I think it's about freedom from fear. And hopefully at the end of somewhere at the end of your life, you can get closer to becoming an authentic, genuine human being, which I think is what this is all about. And you know, I have a lot of people that don't like me, but at least they don't like me. They used to not like me, and they weren't even liking me. They were liking somebody I was trying to be. So at least now, if you don't like me, you genuinely don't like me, because this is who I am. But you know, the good thing is that I got a lot of people that like me and love me, and I love them, and they love me. And I don't have to phony up for them, and I don't have to worry about what they're going to think about me or how I'm going to be or what I'm going to look like. I don't have to try to blend in or anything. I can just be me, and I quite frankly do me better than I do anybody else. And it's no effort to do me, you know. And so I'd much rather live my life as me than live my life as what I think you want me to be. And that's one of the freedoms besides drinking that Alcoholics Anonymous and the God of my understanding has given me. And this guy came up to me, and I don't know whether he was trying to compliment me or what he was trying to criticize me or what he was trying to do. And he says, well, you know, Russ, he says, you know, I like you, but a lot of people don't like you. He says, you know, you talk too much about God. And I don't know whether – I thought he was – and I said to him, I said, you know, I want to thank you. He said one thing. I said, I think that's probably one of the nicest things anybody can say to me. I think hope when I die, I hope one of the things they're saying to me is, you know, he talked a lot about God. Can you imagine that? So I want to tell you right off the bat, if you got a problem with God, you're going to have a problem with me. But you want to know something? That's your problem. That's your problem. And I think if you're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and here comes an opinion, I think you have a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, of Alcoholics Anonymous. Not of what you think this thing should be, or what you would like it to be, or what your wishful thinking believes this is to be. I think if you're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you have a problem with God. I think if you really want to become a member of this deal, you're going to have to get over it. You're going to have to read chapter of the Agnostics again, where it says you're going to have to get over it. I want to read you a few things. Then I want to talk about a couple of things, and then we're going to let me start with page 68. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is a way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. You know, I've been doing the steps for 25 years. I've done them badly, poorly, rightly, wrongly. I've done them in desperation. I've done them at 3 o'clock in the morning. I've done the fourth, fifth. I've done every step you can imagine. Most of the times, not even know what I'm doing. I've done this AA thing so disorganized and organized and backwards and forwards and sideways. And I'm a great preacher and teacher and believer in the steps. I'm here to tell you that even though there's a step series, steps ain't going to keep you sober. Steps ain't going to keep you sober. I know, you know, out of... There's statistics. I sent around an email with statistics. There have been numerous studies as far as sobriety and Alcoholics Anonymous, the percentage of people that stay sober up to 25 years and after. And you know what the percentage is? In AA, who work AA, percentage of people? 0.5%. That's 1 in 200 people stay sober for more than 20 years. I am here to tell you, I don't care what you hear or what you say, that I know of hundreds and thousands of people that have worked the steps, have come in here and gotten sobriety, have stayed sober, doing the steps, have done step meetings, and then have gone out and drank again. Have gone out and drank again. So if you think the steps are going to keep you sober, I've got some bad news for you. Experientially, that hasn't been what I've noticed in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I happen to believe if you don't do the steps, you don't even have a chance. But there's something more than the steps. You see, a lot of people think they look at this mechanically. They look at it more as a recipe, as a formula, scientifically, philosophically, psychologically. I do A, B, and C, and D. I do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12. I put together the recipe, and I get good sobriety. And this isn't a recipe, and it isn't, in my estimation, a formula. It's all about a relationship. The steps are tools. They're tools. They're all tools. They're tools to ultimately get you to one end. And if you don't get the end of the whole deal, if you don't get the point, if you don't understand the point, you can do the steps until the cows come home, because the steps are not the final deal. Where the steps finally take you is they take you to a relationship, and the relationship is with God. Period. End of story. This is going to be my premise throughout this whole series. There's only one thing important in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's only one thing that's important in Alcoholics Anonymous, a relationship with God. Period. Because when it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and the walls are closing in, and you've got cancer of the pancreas, or you don't have the money, and you don't know where it's coming from, or you're all alone, and your life is in jeopardy, and it's all over, I want to tell you something. You better have something more going for you than a fourth step. And anybody who's been in that desperation at 3 o'clock in the morning, wherever you've been, you know that it all comes down to help me, God. God, help me. You better have something going besides a fourth step or an eighth step or a tenth step. Now, you may be reading the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You may be doing all the steps. You may be calling up everything. But it all boils down in the final analysis to your relationship with God. And that's not just my opinion. I do not believe. This latest part of my life has had a purpose, not in the great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day has replaced the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are has replaced the old impatient chomping at the bit to conquer the world. I have stopped tilting at windmills and instead have tried to accomplish little daily tasks unimportant in themselves, but tasks that are an integral part of living fully. Where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. Where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair-weather friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am, and over my AA years I've made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I shall always cherish. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods isn't great, but I have a fortune in friendships, courage, self-assurance, and an honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God, who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I've been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and for serving them, and from serving them as I can. In our book, in our big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, in the chapter Working with Others, this is what it says. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man. Burn the idea into the consciousness of any man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. Later on in that chapter it says, let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he has his family back. This just isn't so. In some cases, the wife will never come back for one reason or another. Remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon people. People. You can go to hundreds of AA meetings. You know what you hear? You hear alcoholics complaining about what? People. My mother, my father, my girlfriend, my boyfriend, what Bill Wilson said is after the booze, it's all about codependency. It's all about unhealthy dependencies. It's all about your day being all messed up because of him, her, it, them. Burn the idea. Believe me, I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous. AA is not about drinking. If you have a drinking problem, this is the wrong place for you to be. I've been to thousands of AA meetings. There ain't nobody, very few people are drunk in AA meetings or even have a drinking problem in AA. If you have a drinking problem, you know what you need to do? You need to get out of here and you need to drink. You really need to drink. The only way I know how to get over a drinking problem is you got to drink. Because here's how you get over it. You'll either die, and then you'll be over it, or you'll stop drinking. Now, when you decide you want to live, then you need to come in here. We don't talk about, we talk about drinking in here for the newcomer, and I understand what, but after a while, you get to that next step, what Bill Wilson called the next frontier, emotional sobriety. Let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he has his family back. This just isn't so. In some cases, the wife will never come back for one reason or another. Remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon people. It is dependent upon, what's it depend upon? His relationship with God. Period. End of story. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot trust him in something that you cannot God. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God. How can a man who walks out of an AA meeting after all that look me in the eye and say, you know what your problem is? You talk too much about God. There is a major disconnect between the big book and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and what this program is about and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and perhaps the disconnect is good. The big book is all about the search for the acknowledgement of the coming out of denial, the finally relationship with a God of your understanding, and ultimately cementing that and growing in that relationship, the maintenance and growth of that relationship, which is what the 11th step is all about. And you walk in the fellowship and they say, oh, you don't have to listen to that. Don't worry about God. There is a major disconnect. And maybe the disconnect is good because it essentially sort of cushions the new person, doesn't it? It sort of cushions the new person who walks in here and reads this book, and it's kind of scary. And maybe it's good to be surrounded by a couple of pillows that say, don't worry about that stuff. You'll get it later. So maybe it serves a purpose. but it may serve a purpose, but it shouldn't blind you to the fact, after you've been around for a while, of what this thing is really about. Because one of the things I have a heart for is people with 15, 16, 17, 18 years sobriety, 20 years sobriety, 30 years sobriety who are miserable. And they're all over the place. Most people live lives of quiet desperation. Don't kid yourself. There's a lot of people with a lot of sobriety that are miserable. And they're not drinking, but they haven't realized what this thing is all about. And they're never going to tell you, and they're never going to say anything, because they're not newcomers, and they don't talk a lot, and they know the AA jargon, and they look sober, and they ain't drinking, you know what I mean? But you won't know inside their heart they're lonely, and they don't know how to break free. And I have a heart for those people. And that's why I like to talk about this stuff. The great fact, we have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had a deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to do those things and accomplish for us those things which we could not do for ourselves. Now, I could read about 100 other paragraphs in the big book, and they all say the same thing. Right up until the chapter, part where they say in chapter of the agnostic is you may have some sort of predilection against God, you may have a prejudice against God, you need to get over that way of thinking. I mean, that's why they have a chapter to the agnostics. They don't have a chapter to the believers. The rest of the book is to the believers. They have one chapter to the agnostics, and what it basically says is, look, we love you, you're great, you need to get over it. You know, get past it already. In 1862, actually, gold was found in Montana. Now, it wasn't as big as the gold rush in California, but it was pretty big. And about 1863, about a year later, the gold panned out. And a group of miners in July of 1863 set out about a couple hundred miners to try to find gold and silver in some other areas, which was ultimately found, and it was quite a large strike. As that group went out, there was a smaller group of miners, about seven, and there was a gentleman named Henry Egger in that group, and Henry Alden, too, that left, and they were behind the first group of miners, and they were looking for gold, and they went into what's called Crow Country, and there were reservations and Crow Indians around, and they got actually captured by the Crow. They managed to escape, and I'm not going to go through that because it's a long story and it really isn't that important. You can look up on the internet. If anybody's interested, I'll tell you where you can find this story. This is a true story. Some of the best stories are the true stories, and this has a lot to do with you. This story has everything to do with you. If you understand this story is going to tell you who's going to make it here and who's not. And this story is going to tell you who's going to be one of that one half of 1% and who's not. And you're either going to get this story or it ain't going to make any sense to you. And that's okay too, because the only people I'm talking to really are the ones that get the story. See, I know when I talk to an A group, I ain't talking to 200 people. First of all, I know there's 200 stories going on in here. There's, you know, I may be saying one thing, but I know that doesn't necessarily mean it's what you're hearing. And there's a long story about that. I'll tell it to you one time. It's called the chicken on the roof deal. But, I mean, that's a whole different deal. So they went out looking, and they captured by the crows, and they broke free of the crows. And these seven guys, actually there were six then because one stayed back. He was a half-breed. There's a whole story about that, but I'm not going to go into that. And they stayed back. So six went, and as they were coming back to town, they stopped by a creek called, which ultimately was called Alden's Creek. And this was outside Bannock, Montana. And a bunch of the miners went around, and two of the guys, including Alden and Edgar, went looking around for water to give water to the horses. They found some rim rock, and they thought they might want to hit it and see if they could find any gold. And they found about $12 worth of gold, which back then was like huge. $12 was a lot of money. So they told the other miners, and they stood there for about 24 hours, and they panned the thing, and they ultimately came up with about $200 worth of gold, which was a lot of money. I don't know what $200 is. Maybe it was like $5,000. So they decided to go back in town. They were out of supplies, and you had to understand something. One of the things they were worried about is claim jumpers. You know, they had to, whatever they did before they started put the claim on it or working it, they had to make sure nobody knew about it. So what they decided to do, and this was the deal, they said, look, we're going to go into town, we're going to get supplies, we're going to be in, and we're going to be out. And but nobody's going to say nothing to anybody. You're not going to tell anybody, you know. And so they made a solemn pact that they weren't going to tell anybody about this deal. So they went into town and they got the stuff and they went out of town and they were going to meet at the old oak tree. And around 4 o'clock in the afternoon, they're going out of town. As they're going out of town, they see behind them 300 miners following them. And, you know, their hearts sink and they sort of like, you know, you sort of get the feeling, you know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out somebody spilled the beans. So they get down to the tree and they talk to the leader of the group. And what they found out was this. This is what they found out. And they said to him, they said, well, who talked? How did you know? And this is what the guy said. He said, nobody said anything. He said, we could see it in your eyes. They could not hide. They could not hide their excitement. It would be like you winning the $60 million lottery and then sort of showing up here and you ain't saying anything to anybody. You know? They could see it in their guy. They could look at these guys and say, we knew you had hit the mother load. We just knew it. When I was 3 months sober, I went to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had been sober for 3 months. I hadn't been drinking. By that time, the obsession to drink had left me. And I was sitting in a meeting just the way you're sitting in a meeting now. There was a guy named Al Kennedy that was speaking, and he was sort of doing what we do at step meetings. He was doing what I'm doing here tonight. He was just talking. And, you know, I was sitting there, and I've always liked in AA, before, during, and after that thing, like good talkers and good, you know, people who could carry a message and give testimony. And I was watching that him, and I was looking at him, and I'll tell you something. I looked at that guy, Al Kennedy, and I'll tell you, I knew I was looking at something special. You know, this guy was, he was a man. You know, I didn't have no idea. One of my problems was I had no idea. You know, I'm not going to blame my father, my mother, my sister, my aunt, but I had no clue as to what a man was. You know, I lived my whole life second guessing myself. It didn't matter how successful I was. I went through law school and all. I had a lot of crap going on. It was all bullshit. The bottom line is, it was all phony baloney because the bottom line is, no matter how much I got behind me, no matter how good I looked on the surface, I was always second guessing myself. I was always comparing my insides with other people's outsides. I was always not good enough. I was always insecure. There was always issues, you know what I mean? And this guy was genuine and he was comfortable and you could tell he was strong, but he wasn't arrogant. You know, he was kind, but there was just something about this person. You know, one of these guys, you ever see a guy and you say, man, I wish I could hang with that guy. Man, if I could just be his friend. You know, I just wanted to be with. You know, he just somebody like a leader, like a father, like a brother, like somebody who, you know, really you wanted to listen to, had something to say, and he was genuine and he was authentic. And he was great, and he just told a little bit about his life, and he talked about the steps, and he did whatever he did, and I was amazed. And, you know, I had no way, I thought everybody was, I was watching this thing, like you would watch a circus, you know what I mean? Like with my mouth, like you would watch like a tightrope walker, you know, going across a tightrope without a net. I was like a little kid. I'm like, you know, like, how did he do, you know, you ever see a good guy? I said, man, how does he do that? I'm watching him, you know. I had no reason to know that everybody was, I thought everybody could see what I saw. I thought the whole room, you got to see this. This is like unbelievable. I didn't know that there were guys in the back that were talking about their girlfriends. There were guys in the parking lot smoking and joking. I didn't realize that everybody didn't see. I thought everybody must see what I'm seeing. And I'm looking at this guy, and I'm watching this guy, and the thing finishes, and he ends, and, you know, I said, hey, thanks, Eli. He says, hey, no problem. You know, he said whatever he said to me, you know, keep coming back, congratulations, God bless you, you know. I mean, he was so grateful and kind and gracious, and he left, and I turned to my sponsor. I said, man, he was great. And this is what my sponsor said to me. I'll never forget it. He said, I know, he's really good. He says, you know, he's dying of cancer. And I said, no, I'm talking about the guy who just spoke. And I said, yeah, he's dying of cancer. I said, no, the guy was just up there speaking. You know, the guy Al Kennedy, he's great. He says, Russell, he's dying of cancer. I said, what do you mean he's dying of cancer? He just did the meeting there. He didn't say anything about cancer. I said, Russell, he's dying of cancer. 3 months later, he was dead. Now, how could I compute that? I mean, I was just now computing like the not drinking thing. You know what I mean? The not drinking thing. I was still sucking my thumb because, you know, I'm like everybody else in Alcoholics Anonymous for the first 10 years. Thumb sucking crybabies. You know? Pretty much like everybody else in AA, just sucking my thumb and crying about stuff, you know? How could I, you know, if anything happened that affected me, hell, it didn't even have to affect me. Anything happened in the Western Hemisphere that affected you that might affect me or could affect me or, you know, the wrongdoings of others, real, fancied or real, real or imagined, imaginary shit, didn't matter, was worth it sucking my thumb, crying and moaning or bitching or feeling sorry for myself or keeping me up late at night. How the hell am I going to compute a guy who's dying of cancer? He didn't say anything about it. He didn't hint at it. He didn't talk to the group about it. He didn't complain about it. And here's even worse. He didn't even look like he was dying. You know what he looked like? He looked like one of them miners. He looked like he had hit the mother load. And you know something? I've been hanging around the fucking old oak tree ever since. Looking for them miners. I don't know what you're looking for. I'm hanging around the old oak tree, and I'm sorry if the F word offends you, but you want to someone, you know why I use it? And I probably shouldn't. You know, my sponsor here is a Baptist preacher. Because I don't know of any way, any possible way, you know, even the Apostle Paul said a curse word every once in a while, I could possibly emphasize how geeked I am about seeing a power like that working in our lives. I can't tell you how amazed I am still. I'm 25 years sober. I'm more excited now than I've ever been in my life. I can't tell you. You know, when I was 10 years sober, I couldn't believe the changes. Joe Snyder told me when I was like 5 years sober, I said, hey, things are good. He says, I don't even consider you sober until you have 10 years. So I got 10 years. Then he told me I didn't consider you sober until you have 20. When I was 10 years sober, I couldn't believe the changes that happened to me in my life between 10 years sober and 1 year sober. And you want to know something? The changes that have happened to me between 20 years sober and 10 years sober make between 1 and 10 like a joke. And I'm absolutely convinced that with God working my life, like 30 years sober, if God should allow me to make it, would make 20 years look like ridiculous. You know, this thing just gets getting better and better and better. And you know something? If you're doing this deal and you're involved in this thing and you have a relationship with God, you should be downright radioactive. People, when they meet you on the street, they should walk away and say, what the hell was that? They should be scratching their head. They should be scratching. You should be changing people's lives just because you walked into a room. It should light. You should be like Al Kennedy all over the place. The power should be blacking off of you like a laser. You know, because I'm telling you something, that's what should be happening. And I'll tell you, if you're 20 years sober, you're 30 years sober, you're 15 years sober, and you're just like hanging in there, hey, that'd be great. Let's just hang around here for 20 years so we can be hanging in there, you know? No, thank you. And I'm not saying that we don't go through hard times, because I'll tell you what, you're going to go through hard times in this deal. We're going to talk about that when we get to 6 and 7. You're going to go through desert times and all sorts of stuff. It's absolutely necessary as part of the deal in order to build character. It's all part of the deal. But I'm telling you, part of this thing is the excitement of what they're talking about in Vision for You, what they're talking about in all these other deals, when they talk about we've been rocketed in the fourth dimension, we've experienced much of heaven. There's some exciting promises involved in this thing. And I'll tell you, I saw that Al Kennedy, and I knew that they were handing out something more in here than just not drinking. I mean, like I say this all the time. I said there's two doors in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's the not drinking door, and we all come in on the not drinking door, and there's thousands of people lined up as far as the eye can see behind the not drinking door. There's another door right here. It's called Rocket in the Fourth Dimension, experiencing much of heaven door. And there's like 1,000 people in front of that door. There's like three guys and a gal in front of this door. And every once in a while, you see a guy or a gal move from this side of the room over to that side of the room, where he's just sold out to this deal. Whatever it means. He doesn't care what you think about him. He doesn't care whether you think he talks too much about God. He just wants that Al Kennedy crap. He just wants to hang out with the miners. You never see anybody walking from this side over to the other side of the room. And these are guys that stay sober for 25 years and feel good about themselves and are authentic and have lives. You know, and I saw that Al Kennedy and I knew what I wanted. I knew what I wanted. Some of us have tried, you know, what does it say? Some people have grave emotional mental disorders, but they too can't recover if they have the desire. The desire. What's your desire? What is desire? What is your desire? What do you really desire? I can tell you what you desire. You can tell me all you want. You know, the one thing about AA that I know of is when all is said and done, there'll be a lot more said or done. I don't even listen to a word anybody tells me. They start talking, I say, look, I don't want to hear it. You know, I don't care what you're talking about. I want to see what you're doing. Because what you're doing and who you hang out with tells me what you desire. See, if you love somebody and you want to have a relationship with somebody, that means you always want to be with them. That means you're always thinking about him. That means you're always talking about him. Man, I'll tell you, if people talk more in here about God, if people talk 10% about God in here and their relationship with God and how much they love God and they want to be with God and who God is, then they talk about their boyfriends and their girlfriends, we'd really have something going here. Because I know what relationship means. It means you're focused on something. You want it. That you take this thing seriously. So one day, I want to tell you, I'm going to end up by telling you a little story. So one day I should caution this. I want to give a little caveat here. Now that I get so intense and crazy and carried away with myself, the truth of the matter is my first 5, 10 years, 15, whatever it is, I struggled with this stuff. You know, I'm 20, I'm talking, there's no way I cannot, this is me 25 years sober. We got guys with long sobriety in here, no big deal one way or the other, but the point is I'm talking to somebody who's 20. I can't talk like I had 3 years. I can't talk like I had 6 months. This is me after 25 years. You know, this is me and my experience. This is what's happened to me. So watch out what's going on. You may laugh at me. You may think I'm crazy, but I'll tell you, don't laugh too hard because you don't know where you're going to be in 10 years. You don't know where you're going to be in 20 years. And the bottom line, so if you're sitting there and you got 2 months or 2 weeks or 2 days or 3 months and you say, I don't understand a word this guy's saying, that doesn't mean there's anything wrong. Because I would have looked at me and said, I would have said maybe, what the heck is going on here? Or maybe not. I don't know what I would have done. But it's all an experience. It's all. But I want you to hear what I have to say because I want you to read the big book. And maybe when you read the big book, you'll see some things in there that you haven't seen yet. Maybe you'll start seeing stuff about God and seeing what they say and just say, this must be what this guy's talking about. So one day I'm driving in my car. It's a Wednesday morning about 4 years ago. And a few years ago, I joined the church. Well, quite about 6 or 7 years. When I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the guys I met who ended up being my sponsor was Joe Snyder. And a lot of you know Joe Snyder. And Joe started me reading the Sermon on the Mount by Emmett Fox and some other things. And I was reading the Bible. And when I came in about 25 years ago, we didn't have like this book that they have that's conference approved and sanitized, you know, whatever they use now. We had, and we still have, the 24-hour book, which is I read, which put together some priest in Alcoholics Anonymous, which basically, you know, did some stuff from the big book. If you read the 24-hour book, it's stuff from the big book and stuff from the Bible. That's basically what it is, in a prayer, and which is pretty good if you know anything about the history of AA and where it came from, the Oxford movement, and the, you know, what that's all about. And I'm not going to go into that. And Bill Wilson's sponsor and Father Ed Dowling and Sam Shoemaker. And I'm not going to go into all that history. Some other day I will when I have more time. But believe me, there's this thing was not discovered by Bill Wilson and Bob Smith. They never claimed to discover this. This AA thing we have, this beautiful thing we have, came from somewhere. Came from somewhere. It was influenced by something. But in any event, I don't know whether you might notice it. Some of you might read Family afterwards. Some might notice some things about how we're not supposed to be prejudiced towards religion, and it actually encourages church membership and things like that. And I'm not saying to be a good AA, you got to do that. I'm just telling you this is what it says in the book. And so somewhere around 16 years sober, I actually started going to a Bible study at a church in my area. And about 18 or 19 years sober, I actually joined the church, and I'm a deacon there now, and I have a deal going there, and I'm very active in the church and things like that. It's one of the bright spots of my life, which is pretty good because I'm all about relationships with God and relationships with people. And I think in AA, you know, I used to think AA, there was us and there was like the earth people. You know, my vacations were always AA vacations. And what I realize now is this is about growing up, and it's about bringing in more people into your life, not closing down. I didn't close myself into an AA coffin. And I have a lot of people in my life that are not AAers. You know, and I love them anyway, and I've learned a lot from them, and I've been able to help some of them, too. You don't have to have a chip in your pocket to be my friend or a medallion to be my friend. You know, either way, that has nothing to do with that. My life has nothing to do with that deal, although I love AA, and I'm very active in Alcoholics Anonymous. So in any event, this actually goes. So the bottom line is I every morning, every Thursday morning, you're going to find me at the men's Bible study at the Oak Hill Presbyterian Church, non-denominational thing. Yeah, anybody can come there, and we have a good time. We've got a lot of guys from the fellowship there and stuff like that. It's from 7:30 to 8:30, and we got good bagels and donuts and coffee. And we've got about 30 guys that show up, and I love these guys. And, you know, some are in their 80s and 90s and, you know, and all that sort of stuff. And then there's youngsters like me. We got some 19-year-olds, too. You ever know? And it's kind of a neat place to go, and it's non-threatening, and we just love people. We just love them. And so on one Wednesday, I want to tell you this little story because it has something to do with something. But, you know, I think you'll figure it out. Or maybe you won't. It won't matter. It'll be a fun thing to talk about because it's a true story. You know, the best stories in AA are true stories. So I'm driving in my car, and when I drive in my car, you know, on the dashboard, I'll have different reading materials. Sometimes I have the big book. Sometimes I have the 12 and 12. Sometimes I have the Bible. I have different versions of the Bible, NIV, you know, King James. So on this particular time, I happen to drive up to this dry cleaners that I put my clothes. Now, I have a dry cleaner. It's called Pierre Dry Cleaners. Nice dry cleaners. A little expensive, I think, but it's near my house. You can see my house from Pierre Dry Cleaners. In other words, if I drive up in my car right now, I drive up at the window. Here's Pierre. My house, you can see it. It's like 10 blocks away, but you can see. I could point to it. I could show you. It's that house. It's that roof. And there's this kid that comes to the door, Pierre's Dry Cleaners. And the only way I can describe this kid is he's about 18 years old, 19 years old, maybe 17, something like that, young kid, and he's got his pants, and I swear this is true, and if there's somebody in here, I'm not putting you down, I'm just telling you this is what I saw. He had his pants, the belt of his pants. Now, you're not gonna understand this unless you've seen this deal, okay? I don't even know how it works even now. Was 4 inches above his knees, okay? Has anybody ever seen this deal? Have you ever seen this? This is a true story. It's 4 inches above his knees. I don't even know what's holding him on. You know what I mean? And he's talking to me like it's like some sort of Indian sign language. You know, you do that, you know. So as we're talking, you know, and he looks at me and he says, "Hey, man, I got one of those." And I said, "One of what?" He says, "One of those." And he's pointing at something. He says, "One of what?" He says, "One of those." And he says, "You mean the Bible?" He says, "Yeah, I got one of those." And I said, "Well, you ever read it?" He says, "Yeah." He said, "You like it?" He says, "Oh, yeah, I like it. I like it. I like it." He says, "I don't understand it, but I like it." I says, "Well, it's kind of hard to understand unless you have somebody to help you." I said, "You ever go to a Bible study?" And he says, no. He says, "Well," I said, "I'll tell you what. What's your name?" He says, "My name's Leo." I said, "I'll tell you what, Leo." I said, "You see that house over there?" He says, "You see that house right over there?" He says, "Yeah." He says, "Look, that's my house. Tomorrow morning at 7:15, I'm leaving my house. I'm going to a men's Bible study." I said, "If you're at my house tomorrow morning at 7:15, I said, "I'll take you to the Bible study with me, and you can go there, and it's an hour, and then I'll drive you back." He says, "You will?" I said, "Absolutely." He says, "Oh, thank you. Thank you very much." He says, "No problem." I leave. I take off. Now, I got to be honest with you. I forgot all about Leo. I mean, it was like a five-second deal. You know what I mean? I forgot. It's like I'm having a chat with a guy. You know what I mean? You know, I think it isn't great that, you know, you can, no matter who you're with, what you do, you can maybe say something that's constructive and positive. You know, you're affecting people's lives. So I leave. And I wake up the next morning, come out at 7:15, and who do you think's standing by my car? Leo. He's got his Bible. Gets in my car. I drive him over to the Bible study. We sit around. We go around the room. He doesn't say nothing. You know, we say some things. We read some stuff. We're talking about stuff. I think at the very end, the last 30 seconds, he said, I think Jesus was an alien, you know. They're just like us. All the guys are just like us. Hey, great. Yeah, I think you're right. Keep coming back. You know, they say the same thing. Same thing, you know, when somebody says something stupid, he says, "Hey, great. Don't drink. Keep coming back." Same deal, you know. So we're driving back, and, you know, because they loved them. They just, you got to understand that group. They're all 90 years old. Anybody comes in with a pulse, they're happy, you know. So we're driving home. We're driving back home, and he says to me, he says, "Would you mind taking me instead of back to your house over to my house?" I said, "Sure. No problem. How do I get there?" He says, "Well, go to where your house is, and I'll direct you from there." So he goes in. I find out a little bit about Leo. I find out that he's a young kid, that he's never really had a father, that he's got a single mother, and she works for a living. She really can't watch him, and he's got a little sister who's 3 years old, and she had it from another father. And, you know, she's a nice gal, his mother, but she's sort of doing the best she can with what she's got. She's got, like, a boyfriend. She's a single mother just trying to survive, and he's just trying to do the best he can. You know, just a good kid, you know what I mean? Just trying, no father, no nothing, you know, just trying to do his thing, you know, and trying to link up and find out where he is in this world. He's, like, 16, 7 years old, doesn't really have much, and, you know, just one of these guys. There's probably 20 gazillion of them in the world. Find a little bit about it. So we get over to his house, and I said, "Okay, where do I go from here?" He says, "Well, go down to the block, go down to that stop sign." He says, "Hang a right." And I said, "I go down to the stop sign and I hang a right." And I go down. He says, "Go down to the next stop sign, hang a left." So I go down and hang a left. And he says, "Now go down to that Colts, turn around and go down there." So I go down there, and he says, "Now you go make it left." He's directing me, and now I'm like 6 miles from my house. And I finally pull up to a townhouse that's around six and a half miles from my house, and I pull up, and I say, he says, okay, this is it. I said, hey, well, you know, it's a great scene. I said, how'd you get over to my house? He says, I walked. And what I found out happened is that he woke up at 3:30 in the morning, and he got showered, and he got changed, and he walked over to my house, and he got there actually an hour early because he didn't want to take the chance of missing me, because that's how badly. And I got people in AA who they say they want to stay sober, and I say, meet me at a meeting, and they say, it's too far, and they have cars. I drive up here from Dade County with 25 years sobriety because I want to do a meeting because I'm so grateful to God because I want to be sober. And I come up here, and some guy says to me, I'd like to hang out with you. And I say, well, I'm going to be over at the car room. And I ask him to travel half the distance. He says, that's quite a ways. That's quite a ways. So when you want to sort of figure out why only one out of 200 gets to 25 years sobriety, you start thinking about Leo. You start thinking about the desire to stop drinking. Start thinking about what your how much do you desire? How much do you really want this thing? How much are you really willing to change your paradigm? Because if the only thing you're going to change in your paradigm, if the only thing you're about in this deal is you're perfectly okay and everything about you is okay, you just have to stop drinking and that everything will be wonderful. Hey, and don't get me wrong, some of you old timers, look, you could screw up your entire life, your entire day, have the worst day in the world. You don't drink. You're an alcoholic. You're a success. And I believe that. Okay? But if all you're about in this deal is you're just not going to drink, but everything else is okay, and you don't want to change any other deal or anything else, you're going to have a hard time with this deal. You're going to have a hard time with this deal. You're going to not like people like me. You're going to stay away from me. Now, some guy said to me once, he says, man, you got a lot of guys that you sponsor. I said, they're only one-tenth of the guys that are trying to hide from me. This is about changing. I've gone over my time. God bless you. I'll see you next week.